And welcome in the latest edition of Tony Talk, presented on Scoops with DannyMac.com. I'm Fox 2 Sports Director Martin Kilcoyne. Our segments are presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, where the blue fountains are still flowing. How cool is that? Triad Bank, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, and Be the Match, that great organization that worked with the young Blues superfan Layla, helping her find her bone marrow donor. Be the Match, a great organization. Let's bring in the Hall of Famer Tony La Russa with us, and we've got a parade coming up for the Blues. You've been part of some parades through the city of St. Louis. Sometimes I've heard players say the parades are almost more memorable than that final out and the final moment. What are your parade memories?
Actually, there's a good story there, because the first championship was the A's in 89, the earthquake year. And because right in the middle of the World Series, as you know, before Game 3, they had the big earthquake, and it was really sad and difficult. Reminded everybody that, you know, we have a game and that's real life. So because there was loss of life and property, the organization decided it would be appropriate not to celebrate. So we had a little rally at downtown, but we did not have a parade. So it wasn't until St. Louis, and that was 89, didn't have one until 06, and over the many years, would see the other teams that won championships, and they'd have the parade, and we always thought, boy, you know, if there's a way, it would be great. And my memories were perfect, because not only did we win in St. Louis, so we could win it with our fans, but the parade, if you remember, each day, it was a beautiful sunny day. And I do believe that the most memorable part, in many ways, other than, you know, if you think about the nitty-gritty of winning the game and winning the parade, and you look up and down on both sides, and the joy the fans have to celebrate a championship is something I'll never forget. And I do think that when the Blues have their parade, you know, as long as it's been, it's going to be something that's going to be overwhelming.
And we're sports guys, obviously, that's our viewpoint. But I do believe that teams can kind of bring a city together, and maybe people that aren't diehard baseball or diehard hockey fans kind of get into the run and kind of get on board. And you probably have that picture in your head, too, just the joy, the pure joy people get out of it. I just think it's so great for a city. And it can be, it doesn't fix everything, but it can be a unifying moment.
Yes, I think, you know, as part of what we just talked about a minute ago, you know, we know it's not real life in the sense that, you know, the adversities you face and it's the tragedy sometimes and some of the wonderful moments with your family and friends, but it is entertainment, and there is something about sports that's really pure, because, you know, you go in there and there's no script and anybody can beat anybody, and when the game starts, you see the competition. So I think people really get into their team, especially when you look at St. Louis. It's such a religion that, with the Blues, it's such a great story, and they beat this outstanding team, a historic team like the Bruins. So, yeah, I think it has a lot of meaning as far as a unifying force, and something that, you know, now besides the Cardinals, you know, fans are really going to look at next season and how they put their team together, the Blues, and what happens. So I absolutely agree that it's something that is very important to a community.
People may not realize you had a tradition when you guys would win. I remember seeing that. You would run outside, especially the old Bush. You like to run outside after a clinch and listen to the horns, right? When did that become a thing?
Let me see. The first time we won was 96. I was not aware of it. I think it was in the, you know, once we got it going again was in the 2000. I think probably maybe around 2002, something like that, when I first could tell there was something going on. But you get down to the ball in the clubhouse, there's so much noise and celebration. I didn't realize it. Then I heard about it, and you're right. I wanted to experience that very unique thing. And while you went out there on the sidewalk, you saw the fans. And, you know, to me, the joy that you bring to your fans, to the organization, people that work in the organization in whatever capacity, is really what I took away from it, more important than the self-satisfaction. It's just how much people can get into what you're doing and appreciate and enjoy it.
Yeah, the horns being the people just laying on it, the car horns. Tony would run out there, kind of right across from the Bowling Hall of Fame, the old days, that little tight street. I can picture you running out. I just wonder if anybody ever came up and said anything. I also want to ask you about an appreciation when a franchise does something special. In 2004, you guys are on the other side of it. Great disappointment because the team was so good, didn't play well in that series. We've talked about that. But for Boston, it had been such a long wait. I wonder if the other side, sure, the Bruins are devastated they lose. Does the other side ever appreciate history when a franchise does break through, do you think, or does that come later?
Well, I do believe that our fans got that message sooner than some of us that were in uniform, because I can remember right away stories about how they were congratulating and how the Cardinals let people in from outside that were, you know, Boston fans, so they could see the last out. And so, I think that sooner rather than later, it's very appropriate, and it does happen, that you recognize how big it is to win a championship. And obviously in 04, 86 years for the Red Sox, with all their disappointments and all the many times they got in, it was very significant. And same thing with the Blues. I know right away, you know, everybody knew here, you know, we were in Boston, so the whole Red Sox family, people that I'm around, even in the restaurant that I watched the game, they were all pulling for the Bruins, and I was pulling for the Blues. And right away when they lost, they were very disappointed, but they right away, there was an acknowledgement that everybody has a right to enjoy that special moment. And the Blues had a long time coming. And then we had I'm going to mention this very quickly because he was is such a great friend to all of us with the Cardinals. Began with Barry Weinberg meeting him, but Ray Borelli, the great trainer for the Blues, was such a great friend. To see him celebrate, hold the cup and everything, it was magical. So my long-winded answer, Martin, is that definitely people realize, just like last night when Toronto beats Golden State, I could see a lot of character on the Warriors as they show, but I saw, because I've got to know some of the players and the coach, and I saw that they understood the significance of Toronto winning an NBA championship, and the same thing for the Blues.
It's amazing how these things happen. I know 20 years ago the Rams was the lightning in a bottle, and we sort of made the analogy this goalie, Jordan Binnington, is kind of the Kurt Warner of this story. Nobody thought he was any good, more or less. He was like the fifth goalie in training camp, and then he gets a chance and takes off. But we're talking on the radio at the trade deadline, well, maybe just blow this thing up. And their GM, Doug Armstrong, doubled down, and he had meetings with the players and said, I'm keeping every one of you. You guys are good enough. We can do this. And probably cynics like me said, I don't know, you might want to look at next year. And these storylines, it happens. They're not always as quirky as this one. But you just don't know, right? I mean, that's what Mike Shannon always says. The reason he gets excited to go to the ballpark, he said, I have no idea what I'm going to see. And this script for this team, it's unbelievable how quirky it is. And we've got an interim coach, and everybody just kind of gave up on the team except for them. And I guess, I don't know what the long-winded question is, but you never really know. Even though the pundits think they do, you just don't.
Well, that's the beauty. That's really the beauty of it. And in fact, if tomorrow we all went to a movie, and the Blues story was on film, we'd say, boy, that's Hollywood and their Fantasy Island creation. And the fact that it is real really adds a lot to it. I mean, I think what the Blues did, I don't want to analogize it too much because the Blues winning for the first time is just huge. But in 2011, you know, when we were going through that great comeback and then getting into the playoffs and beating those teams, it did feel like Fantasy Island. And if you look at all the adversity we had, and that famous meeting at the Cauliflower Ear, the dinner where Wainwright stood up and says, I know these guys, and they're not going to give up, and they can win this thing. I mean, it's Hollywood-ish.
A reminder to all of our listeners, subscribe at Google, at iTunes. That way, each week, these segments are delivered directly to you. Of course, this week, we're a day behind because of travel in Boston. I think everybody understands what the Blues sort of dominating our time lately. That's why it's coming to you on this particular Friday. And you can communicate with us, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. With Father's Day this weekend, I thought it'd be interesting to learn a little more about your dad. You would quote him often. the moments I'm thinking of, a lot of times it was manners related. You would quote your dad, and then I'm reading online, and there's things on Wikipedia. I never know what's true for sure, but it says that your mom and dad met while working at a cigar factory. Let's start with that. Is that accurate?
That's right. Tampa, Florida. My dad's a Sicilian family, and my mom is Spanish. So their families all came over. In fact, I remember through Ellis Island, my dad's came through Ellis Island, and they met at a cigar factory, and a lot of my aunts and uncles also worked at the same cigar factory, so that's true.
And your dad's role in your life, I think of manners many times where you'll quote him. Did you guys play ball in the backyard, or was he always working? What was it like with your dad?
Well, I'll focus on my dad, Martin, because it's Father's Day coming. But, it's very appropriate someday to do Mother's Day, because my mother, they were both so instrumental in what, what I learned and what I tried to become. But my dad was just a really hard worker. You know, he, 6 days a week, getting up early. Most of what he did in his adult life was he drove one of those big milk trucks on a wholesale route to restaurants and so forth. And he had to get up early, worked really hard. And when he came home, boy, I mean, he's exhausted. All he had was Sunday. But he loved the game of baseball. And actually, one of the things he did to provide me a chance was as I got to be a prospect in high school during the summer, he did not want me to work. He wanted me to devote myself, excuse me, to sports and baseball, because as a kid, his father did not really give him a chance to pursue his baseball dream. So, but I know one of the things that I quote most, very often is he would tell me, it's easy to fool people, just don't fool yourself. And I think the reality, if you live by, look in the mirror, and if you feel good about who you're looking at, goes a long way to reacting appropriately to different situations.
Well, it's my fault for not bringing up Olivia, your mom, when we were to go ahead and talk about her, because I forgot to do it when we did our Mother's Day week. Tell us a little bit about her influence.
Well, she was, my dad worked so hard that a lot of times, especially when I was in junior high and high school, and I come in, he's sleeping, and if I was late, she was the one that gave me the lectures. And But we actually lived next to an alley upstairs over a service station when I was a kid, and she'd go into the alley with the rocks and roll me balls, and I'd throw it to her. But one of the things that I remember the most about my mom, she was very much into education. She's the reason that I went to undergraduate school, and even when I signed my professional contract, because I promised her I would. And last but not least, she's the one that got me into reading when I was 5 or 6 years old, and gave me the love of books, which is right now is one of the best parts of my life, is how much I get from reading books.
All right, a friend of Tony question is about John Grisham, and it's related because one of the times recently he was on with Frank Cusimano, and he was talking about being a lifelong Cardinal fan and getting to know you, and I believe, did his dad get on the phone with Stan or something? He told some story about how you put Stan on the phone for his dad, and so it had me thinking Father's Day related. But tell me about getting to know John Grisham. Speaking of books,
well, very quick, it was Ty Darf. I read books and read books, and John was one of my favorite authors, and Arf was doing a calendar of celebrities, and I had read A Painted House, which is about John's growing up and sitting on the porch with his dad and his brothers, listening to Jack Buck and hearing about Gibson and Brock and Musial and Shandy's and all these great Cardinals. So I thought I would reach out to John Grisham's agent, and I said, look, and I actually talked to John, and I said, look, why don't you come to spring training, because all your guys you write about are here during spring training. And so as it turned out, he said, well, I can't come, but I'll come to opening day, and I'll bring my dad, Big John. Well, to solidify the deal, I said, well, can you get your dad on the phone? So he called back a little later, and it was one of those days in spring training. I just had Stan there and put him on the phone with John, Big John. And John later on, as John, the author, said, would always, the father would always talk about one of the highlights of his life was to be on the phone with Stan Musial, which all of our Cardinal fans could understand. If you could talk personally to Stan, you know, you'd never forget it.
And that's how you close a deal. That's how you say, you know what, I got Stan right here. I'm going to put him on the phone with your dad. All right, great baseball question when we come back. A recent storyline between the Dodgers and the Giants. We'll get into that next here on Tony Talk. Be the Match, a great organization, now a proud sponsor of Tony Talk, our weekly visits here with the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. Be the Match has gotten a lot of attention of late because Layla, the Blues superfan, has gotten a lot of attention. And her story, you know what it is, needed a bone marrow transplant. Here's what takes place. Every 3 minutes in the United States, someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer. They turn to the family first, but 70% of the time, the family isn't a match. In the case of Layla Anderson, the super fan for the Blues, she needed a bone marrow transplant. They went to the registry. That's what Be the Match is all about. They have the donor registry. She got the call. Her family found out she had a match. She had a donor. It saves lives. Be the Match is really a community. It's donors, it's volunteers, it's healthcare professionals, it's researchers. You can get involved, bethematch.org/give. You can make a donation so they can continue the great research they're doing, helping save lives. That's what Be the Match is all about. We appreciate them being a sponsor on Tony Talk. Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living, independent living at the Villa Estate, skilled nursing, memory care. They have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila, you are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run, and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com. We suggest you go online and schedule a tour.
It's Tony La Russa for my friends at Victory Men's Health, where they can help you be you again. If you're dealing with low T, ED, or vitamin deficiencies, make sure to see my friends at Victory Men's Health. They now have two locations, O'Fallon, Illinois, and the new addition in Town and Country. Both offices feel more like a man cave than a clinic. So get yourself back in the game by setting up an appointment at victorymenshealth.com.
One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood-friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64. Get to Lindbergh and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, five-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com.
Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution. A reminder each week to email the show at any time, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. And Tony, the question was raised about Madison Bumgarner reacting to Max Muncy. The Dodgers hitter puts it into the bay in San Francisco, and I guess it depends on whose side you're on. They say he didn't really pimp it. Bumgarner's shouting at him. We've talked in the past about the bat flip and maybe the showmanship, but who's in the right there? Because I guess the pitcher's mad, but the batter could say, dude, just strike me out next time. And I don't know how much you've seen of this video. And Bumgarner's an intense competitor. You know, what is there a right answer to this?
Well, I think you got to qualify a little bit first. You know, when you have a special rivalry, Dodger Giants, Cubs, Cardinals, you know, Yankees, Red Sox, it is a different breed of cat as far as how players are into those series and how sensitive they are about anything. You know, it doesn't take much to rub a guy the wrong way. So if you remember that, that was adding some salt to the wound there. But it does happen too often now. And you have, you know, Bumgarner, one of the reasons he's a great pitcher and has been a great performer in clutch moments like the World Series is because he is a really outstanding and tough competitor. You know, a lot like a Dave Stewart and a Chris Carpenter, even though he does it with a smile, and Adam Wainwright. I mean, you know, these guys are really tough, and when they get into a game, man, they got a little meanness to them. So they don't like hitters. And then if you take a hitter under the pressure of facing whatever, if they do something really big, you know, they get excited. So who's in the right? I think if Bumgarner is going to be allowed to yell at somebody, then a player, a hitter, has the ability and the right to get excited about it. In that particular incident, I didn't think Muncy did anything special. But Madison is really wound tightly. And would I get on Madison? No, because I love the way he competes. And I just think it's one of those things, you yell at each other, but what you don't want to do, as a pitcher, you don't want to take a cheap shot with that baseball and hit him. And as a batter, you know, you don't want to overreact if the ball is thrown inside and start coming out the mound and start a big fight. So I don't know if that's a very good answer, Martin, but I do believe that as long as it's sincere, if a hitter is excited and not a show-off, it's a good point to make. Sometimes these guys put on a show, it's very insincere, then that is not acceptable. But if it's sincere emotion on either side, I'm good with it.
Do you think Bruce Bochy even talks to him about it, or is that something he's such an established veteran, you just let it go? And I'm picturing Chris Carpenter even yelling at like a Brendan Ryan. Does you just kind of let that stuff go, let these guys, let the emotions play out?
I believe I know Bruce, and I believe he believes, as I do, it's about sincerity. There ain't anything phony about Madison out there. And I just, while you bring it up, I'll say very quickly, you know, our fans will remember if Carp threw a ball down the middle and got the ball out of the ballpark, you know, he just got mad at himself because he made a mistake. But if he made a pitch and a guy popped it up and he started complaining all the way to first base, he'd yell at the, hey, I just made my pitch, don't be disrespectful. And I remember Carlos Lee with Houston one time pointed at him all that, and Carp, you don't do that to him. Well, I actually remember Sammy Sosa did it one time. He came by the mound. I said, I apologize, Mr. Carpenter, it won't happen again. So, it, you know, it's that's the truth. And it's just, I think it's sincerity. If that's the way you compete, and as long as you don't cross the line of endangering someone, I'm good with it.
And this week, Redbird Roulette, we always bring up some random names, some more prominent names. Last week, great discussion about Larry Walker. But I was looking into, you know, championship teams. And for the Blues, you've got a fourth line. These guys who aren't necessarily your glamour guys, but get it done. And I'm thinking 2006, the bullpen, sort of the randomness. Now we look back, you had a Josh Kinney, Tyler Johnson, and then Randy Flores, who, of course, is now with the team, scouting director. But you had to have pieces like that to make a run. Give me a thought on each guy and how that bullpen just sort of came together out of nowhere. And we know Josh Kinney's story. He was pitching in the Frontier League, but give me a thought on each guy and how it just all sort of worked at the right time.
Well, that's a great point, because in any of the championships or any team that plays really well, you know, the stars had to be stars, but you got to have complementary players that understand their role. The Aaron Miles, you know, jump in there. You know, Skip Schumacher would do anything for a team. But in 06, it's difficult to understand that championship sometimes with the 83 wins. Not so much because if you understand how hurt we were and how healthy we became for the playoffs. But the fact that that bullpen, you're talking about two lefties that were young. Josh Kinney was young, and Adam Wainwright became the closer as a rookie because Izzy was hurt. If you look at the job that they did throughout the playoff, I may exaggerate this, but they didn't give up anything as far as runs. And their ability to deal with the big situation is a tribute to the way, you know, they got into the competition. If you really get into just trying to win, you know, you can and do your part and be accountable. It'll be surprising the assets and the concentration you bring to it. But you can't finish this point without talking about the greatest pitching coach, Dave Duncan, and the job that Yadier Molina, as a young catcher, his second full year, did to handle that young bullpen through some. I'll give it to you, man. We're going to run out of time, but just think about this. Game one against the Padres, Carp was winning after six innings, and I pulled him. And we went with the four kids, and they got all the outs. The next day, game two, Weaver was winning 2-0 with a two-hitter after five innings. Pulled him for what we think are good reasons. The four young kids came in there and shut him down. They were amazing, and I think it was because they are amazing and got into the competition and because of Dave and Yadi.
Next week, it'll be all about Albert Pujols, his career, sort of his emergence onto the scene, and I know you're looking forward to being here next weekend.
Yeah, that'll be I've looked forward to this for a long time, and I just can't wait to see the response that our fans have give their Albert when he comes back. And I'm so pleased that he's really having his averages down some, but he's having a big year for them, and it'll be very, very it'll be up there with one of the best moments, tied for first, one of the best moments in Cardinal history.
Oh, I feel better. I got it tied for first. Tony Talk, presented each week by Marie Davila Senior Living, Triad Bank, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, and Be the Match. Tony, have a great week. We'll do it again a week from now.
Okay, thanks. Look forward to it.